This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Some claim they're good at it, others say they hate it, and many may not even realize they're doing it. But negotiating is something most of us engage in every day in both our professional and personal lives. And it's something Molly Fletcher knows how to do very well. Dubbed the female Jerry Maguire, Fletcher spent nearly two decades as a sports agent, landing more than $500 million worth of deals throughout her career. Now head of the Molly Fletcher Company, a speaker and author, Fletcher provides a strategic guide to getting the most out of every negotiation in her latest book, A Winner's Guide to Negotiating, How Conversation Gets Deals Done. She joins us to discuss the art and skill of negotiation, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Molly, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, before you came on, we were talking about how it took Cincinnati nearly 10 months to negotiate a new agreement on the city's pension fund. And people often think negotiations as being long and over some serious issue. But isn't it true that negotiations can take any size and any form? And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes we may not even realize we're doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, I've sort of in chapter four of the book, I talk about sort of the power of the pause. And I think that, you know, a pause can be, to your point, 2 minutes, it can be 30 seconds, and it can be months. And so the pause can be really powerful, be it for both sides potentially inside of a negotiation. And it's absolutely real. And I agree with you, Mark. I mean, I think it's amazing when we think about negotiation, it does happen all the time all around us. And that was one of the things that kind of inspired me to write the book, was in hopes that people would recognize that it sort of exists in our world all around us, and how can we make sure that we're asking for what we want inside of the worlds that we live in.
You estimate you've worked on a $500 million in deals for 300 clients over the past two decades. What do you think has been the key to your success?
Well, to me, it's really about connecting and not just communicating. It's really about putting yourself on the same side of the table with the people that you negotiate with. So oftentimes I think we think, that we're supposed to get sideways with folks that we negotiate with, that's sort of what that word kind of, that's what so many people think of when they think of that word, is that, you know, we're supposed to get, you know, our gloves off, right, or gloves on, or whatever you want to say, and go at each other. And to me, it's about putting yourself on the same side of the table in hopes that you can connect enough that you can keep the conversation going. And obviously, if we can keep the conversation going, then hopefully we can get ourselves to a deal. To me, negotiation is just that. It's just a tough conversation. That's all it is.
And you think part of the problem is that sometimes people view it as a situation where one side wins, the other side loses?
Absolutely. And I don't, you know, what, you know, and I think it's important for people to recognize that it doesn't have to be that way, right? I mean, we negotiated lots of deals where both people got up from the table pleased. And, you know, one of the things I used to always say is when we negotiate a Major League Baseball player's contract, you know, he's got to go play for that team in that city inside of that market for those fans and for that community. And it was always incredibly important to me that what the papers would write about the deal were things that would represent the player in a positive light. And there's a lot of things that go along with, you know, beyond the dollars, that go along with sort of the process. And that's why, to me, it wasn't ever about winning or losing. It was about trying to make sure that the guys and the gals that walked out of the room felt like it was a fair deal, and that everybody could sort of step into their roles after that and you know, do it with sort of high integrity. I mean, one of the guys that I worked with forever is John Smoltz, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame yesterday. And he's an example of a guy that, you know, we did tons of deals with the Braves with, and then of course, Boston and St. Louis. And, you know, but he's a guy who, you know, I think always appreciated the fact that we were an extension of him. And I think that we did it in a classy way. And that to me is what negotiation needs to be.
Why did you decide to go into the tough competitive field of being a sports agent?
Well, I was a student athlete. Actually, I'm a Midwest girl like you guys, right? So I grew up in Michigan and went to Michigan State and played tennis there. And I wanted to stay in the business of sports. Got down to Atlanta at 21 years old with about $2,000 in hopes that I could find a job in the sports business. And was fortunate to live with a friend on the floor of her apartment and spent months and months trying to find a job and got an opportunity with a small agency in Atlanta. And was able to work with Smoltz initially and guys like Doc Rivers and then continued to grow the client base over 15 or 20 years. And you know, to me, what I have always loved about the business is that you're around the best of the best. You're around people that want to be their very best selves each and every day, both as athletes and hopefully as people too. And we were fortunate to work with good guys and good gals, and that was, you know, important to us and important to me. So, you know, why did I do it? I mean, you get it's a relationship business. It's a business that allows you to cultivate and build relationships with people that have a really short window of time to make an enormous amount of money in a very unique way. And our job was to obviously try to maximize that window of time for them. And so that was really special. And now I spend most of my time speaking and writing books and you know, really connecting the dots for business people on, you know, there's such incredible synergies in sort of how the best athletes and coaches execute at the highest level and how business people can execute at the highest level as well.
You mentioned John Smoltz. Who were some of your other favorite clients in your sports agent days?
Wow, you know, Doc Rivers was just a class act and still is and still in the business. And then, of course, guys like Ernie Johnson Jr., other big league guys like Brian Moeller. I'm trying to think of some guys with the Reds. But we didn't work with football players or basketball players. So most of it was coaches. Aaron Andrews was a broadcaster that we worked with, Chip Carey. And then, of course, guys like Joe Theismann when he was a TV guy. So, you know, really sort of I think when you listen to those names, you go, wow, those are good guys. And, you know, unfortunately, there is so much about sports that hits the paper that isn't good. But, boy, I'll tell you, and I can share, I mean, in 15 years of doing that, there is – so much good in sports, and you know, I felt like we had the opportunity to work with those kind of guys, and that was pretty cool.
Well, what were some of the tougher negotiations you faced as a sports agent?
Well, you know, certainly there was many, right? I mean, there was obviously plenty. You know, I think what some of the tougher ones were things when, you know, we had a baseball player once, Jeff Francoeur, who was, you know, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, right? The world called him the Natural, and they really sort of thought he was, you know, kind of going to be the next best really special baseball player. And, you know, he came into the league and had some success initially and then really began to struggle. But when he was arbitration eligible, which means, right, the team owns his rights and we have to negotiate inside of sort of this process of 3 years when he's arbitration eligible. And that one got a little sticky because we were scheduled to get on an airplane and go to arbitration where we would have, you know, three people decide, you know, whether Jeff should be paid what we thought he should be paid or whether they should be paid what the team thought he should be paid. And so it was literally the night before we were getting ready to get on the plane and go. And the general manager called me at about 11 o'clock that night and, you know, was still trying to make sure we were still firm where with regards to our position, our bonuses, our base, all those things. And we were, and Jeff had my back on what we were going for and believed that he was worth that as well. And so, you know, we got that deal done at, you know, 11:30 the night before we were getting ready to go to arbitration. So, you know, those kinds of deals, you know, were challenging. I think when you're inside of arbitration, you don't have as much leverage as maybe you'd like. So deals when we don't have as much leverage, deals when the relationship for whatever reason isn't optimal with the team or the GM. Obviously, you know, some of the best deals are the deals when you get a guy who needs 32 more days in the big leagues and he gets his retirement for the next, you know, for the rest of his life. That he needs 32 more days to make it to 10 years in the big leagues, or a coach that needs more head coaching days to get his pension. Those are really special deals. So to me, it wasn't really ever, you know, about the money, but about the way that you're changing these guys' lives. And so when you can see moments when you change their lives in significant ways, that's pretty special. Mark DeRosa was a guy that we did a deal with in Chicago, and you know, he'd always made and wasn't expected to be sort of the player that he had become. And DeRosa was a guy who, you know, had made a couple million bucks. And then all of a sudden we were able to do sort of a multi-year $12 million deal with the Cubs for him. And that was pretty special because, you know, his brother was a financial advisor and I think helped Mark understand how unique that was and how unique it would be and the opportunity that would present for his family. So those were fun.
Molly, did you ever have a client ask you to negotiate something odd or unusual? And how do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, I mean, certainly they'll ask for things, and I think that's when you have to be able to have the courage to have the tough conversation with a client. And, you know, one thing I would never do is was asked for something that I sort of already thought I knew the answer to, or that I felt like would position the athlete in a negative way with the team or the club. But, you know, some guys would ask for suites on the road. That was always a big one. you know, I mean, it's always hysterical. I mean, these guys will make, you know, $500,000 every other week. And then they want to make sure that they get, like, you know, free babysitting at the stadium, you know, when wife brings the kids and they want to have them, you know, be with the babysitters instead of outside, you know, at the game. And, you know, you're talking about $5 a night, right? And sometimes it was like silly, goofy things like that. You know, Mike Fratello, when he was a coach, you know, we were able to get him sort of this free deal where he got free dry cleaning. you know, and it's unbelievable. I mean, you can make and every guy, you know, in the sports space would attest to the fact that it's about the deal. It's about the chase for these guys so often. I mean, when you hand a guy, you know, gear from Under Armour, Nike, or whatever the brand is, they love it. And you think to yourself, some of these guys could buy the company. They could buy the brand. But they're excited about a T-shirt or a zip-up or whatever it is. So, but we were always, you know, I mean, my guys were, you know, there when I delivered my daughters and at our wedding. And so I always felt like I was close enough to them to tell them the truth. In an effort to manage their reputation the right way and really support them authentically.
We're talking with Molly Fletcher. Her latest book is A Winner's Guide to Negotiating, How Conversation Gets Deals Done. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Molly, you say that effective negotiating comes down to seeing it as a conversation built over time. Now, why do you say that?
Well, you know, when we think about negotiation, I think it's about a couple things. One, it's really about trying to find common ground with the person that you're negotiating with. And one of the things that I think oftentimes people think is sort of counterintuitive to the process, but that I think is important, is people think you've got to, kind of hold your cards close to your chest. You know, I believe that the more you can connect with the people that you're negotiating with, not just communicate with them, but truly connect, the way that you can find common ground with them and whatever it might be, relevant or irrelevant to the deal. I mean, because at the core, these are people. That the more that you can truly connect with them and find common ground with them, then I believe the more it allows the conversation to continue. And the more that you lay the foundation, hopefully on the front end, and the more that you connect on the front end, then I believe inside of the negotiation process, then you ask for what you want. And when we ask for what we want, so often in life, people ask for what they want and then they follow it up with the why and the connection. And I actually believe it has to happen in the reverse. You've got to find the connection and you've got to ask for what you want and be able to, after you ask for what you want, you got to stop talking. You know, so often people ask for what they want and follow it up with sort of this, because, you know, I mean, it would be really worth it and it would be helpful if we just need to ask for what we want and sort of zip it. And allow that other person to sort of hold that question and react to that question. Inside of that moment, you get so much data back from the person that you're having this conversation with. That's really powerful data. So I think that when we think about it as a conversation, we can think about, okay, how do I make sure I connect? How do I build a foundation on the front end for as it relates to my case? How do I listen enough that I demonstrate authentic curiosity with the person that I'm negotiating with, so that when it becomes time to ask for what I want, I have already done all those things. So, you know, when you go to the gym and you take that 8-pound, 15-pound, 8-pound, 12-pound medicine ball and you throw it back and forth, if you're working your abs, for example, you throw that medicine ball back and forth. Well, I think a big question when you ask for what you want in a negotiation is sort of like that medicine ball. And so you want to throw it over there and make them hold it and let them sit on that. And allow them then to react to it. Because when people react to that question, you know, again, we get a lot back.
Is negotiating more of an art than it is a science?
Well, I think it's really about the head and the heart, certainly, no question. And you know, I think it's about understanding what's in the heart of the people that you're dealing with. What are they worried about? What's important to them? What matters to them? You see, you know, LeBron James coming back. You see players consistently. Smoltz was a guy who stayed in Atlanta for a long time because his heart was there. So I think you've got to recognize where their heart is, but you've also got to marry that with sort of where the head is, both within yourself, but also within the people that you're negotiating with. So it's certainly multifaceted, right? And, you know, one of the, you know, it's sort of like one of the things that we talk about is the reason that, for example, gender is a chapter that I talk about in the book. And sort of, it's very interesting that you know, women are really good at finding common ground. They're really good at building that foundation. But where women lack oftentimes is the ability to ask for what they want. And that was, again, another inspiration to write the book, was to inspire more women to have the confidence and the courage to ask for what they want inside of a negotiation, and to understand it better. It's amazing. I think the statistics are pretty interesting. 69% of people say that what they know about negotiation, they learn just through the life that they live, through their experiences. And like 87% say that they want to understand how to negotiate better. And so to me, that demonstrated a gap that I hope this book helps fill with people.
During your time in the sports world, other than yourself, there was an absence of women, wasn't it, when it came to negotiating deals? What do you think it's going to take to open that up more to women?
Yeah, right, certainly. Well, there was really no women in the room ever. In fact, I mean, I've got some funny stories in the book about that are pretty fun. And there was none. And that was okay. I mean, to me, again, it was about two people, three people, five people connecting as people, regardless of gender, and being good at what you do. And I think when you're good at what you do, when you know your stuff, right, then to me, good things will happen. So what is it going to take? I think that, you know, we've got to get more women to have the courage to ask for what they want. If this is a career that women want to pursue, you know, the thing that I always tell young people is go for it. I mean, you're going to have a laundry list of people that are going to tell you that you can't get it done and you can't do it. And I certainly had a lot of people like that. But to me, I thank them, because now they're the people that, in fact, I think probably sort of inspired me to pursue it anyway. So, you know, I think that there's room for women in this business. There's no question. I think that as a woman, there was a lot of advantages. You know, I'm a wife and a mother of three daughters. And I think all those things lended itself to an opportunity to connect with these athletes, their families, their parents, their wives, their girlfriends, in a way that was different than other men that were agents as well. So I think it laid a nice, unique lane for me to live in, and you needed to understand how to walk that tightrope, certainly. But fortunately, I was able to do that well, and I think with some sort of hybrid between, you know, obviously their sports agent, but also, you know, a wife, a sister, a mother, as a former athlete, I got that competitive piece that they deal with and live with as they compete. So I think there's a unique lane for women, and I hope more women have the courage and have the aspiration to get into the business, because I can promise you there are plenty of male athletes that need great women beside them to support them on this journey.
So you think we should be more aware of the role of gender in negotiations?
Absolutely, and no question. I mean, I think gender is real inside a negotiation, and I think understanding that dynamic is imperative, and that's why I spent, you know, an entire chapter on that very topic, was in hopes that it would provide a bit of clarity for folks. But I would also say that I was never a woman in the room that worried about being the only woman in the room. To me, what it was about was being prepared, being good, being confident, being transparent, being authentic, being honest. All those things to me, were more relevant than the fact that oftentimes I was the only woman in the room and I didn't pay a lot of attention to that. I paid attention to trying to be good and better than the other guys.
We're talking with Molly Fletcher. Her new book is called A Winner's Guide to Negotiating, How Conversation Gets Deals Done. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Molly, you write about five things that a great negotiator does well. What are those five things, and which one of them is most important?
Well, they find common ground with the people that they're negotiating with. They ask for what they want, no question. And then they embrace the pause. And then they know when to leave, right? Part of negotiation is understanding that sometimes we've got to walk away. And having clarity around that before you walk into the room, to me, is incredibly important. Having clarity around what are you going to be excited about if you get this deal done, and what are you going to be comfortable walking away from? I would always try to have that in my head before I'd walk into a negotiation so that I knew what was acceptable and what was unacceptable. Which one's most important? You know, to me, it's the one that the media has sort of grabbed, and that oftentimes people seem to find the most interest in is pausing. You know, I think that when you look at people that are really good at it, it's people like you, right? People in the media are really good often at pausing because they allow, you know, whether it's whether it's their guests or a celebrity or whoever it is to sort of talk themselves into a hole if they'll keep talking. So to me, the media is really good at pausing, and so are attorneys, obviously, right? Because they make money when somebody's talking, so they're good at it. So I think that the most important thing is to recognize those moments when we need to just ask and then just sort of shut up and allow that moment to hold its own space and allow the other side of the room to really react to the question or the comment that we've posed.
Can you give me an example of a pause? Didn't you use it one time when you needed a toothbrush at a hotel?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I do it all the time. And I do it all the time. I mean, I do it when I'm buying soccer t-shirts for my daughters at the end of a game or, yes. I mean, I did it at a hotel. We were out there for the Rose Bowl as a Michigan State grad. I went out to California for the Rose Bowl last year. You know, I think probably one of the best ones was when I was negotiating a deal for one of our baseball players, and I was laying in bed. It was late at night. Of course, I'm telling these stories about late at night, right? Because I used to sleep with my phone, you know, next to my bed, which is sort of sad, but that was the reality of it. And so the phone rang, and as the general manager continued to sort of be curious about the fact that we were still where we were at and frustrated, he certainly was, he paused, and he did a great job of pausing after he sort of made a comment and I had sort of made another comment. And in that moment, I just held the phone. And my husband finally, after about 30 seconds, goes, "Is he still there? Is he still on the phone?" And I had muted it and I nodded. And my husband said, "Say something." And I said, "No, this is exactly when you don't say something." And after about another good minute, the GM said, "Fine, we got a deal." He said, "Done. I'll fax the term sheet over now." And it was a 2-minute pause, which is a long time to pause. But it was a pause in which I sent him a message that, hey, we're where we're at. I've built the case as much as I can. There's no more selling to be done. I knew my client had our back. And so to me, it happens all the time inside of great negotiations. And those are the moments. Those are the moments when I think oftentimes the deals get done or they don't get done. So I would just encourage people to have the courage to ask for what you want and then stop talking and allow that moment to bring you some great feedback. And all that's data, and that data will help you hopefully come to a resolution that both of you can be excited about.
You were talking earlier about having the courage to be able to walk away from a deal. How do you know when to do that?
Well, I think it's about getting really clear before you walk into the room on what you'd be happy with and what you wouldn't be happy with. So that the moment that oftentimes emotion comes into play, which is really powerful in a negotiation, we want to try to remove emotion. We want to try to bring emotion out of the person we're negotiating with, but we certainly want to remove it from ourselves. So I think what's really important is to get really clear on the front end so that when you're in the room, inside of that emotion, oftentimes inside of that difficult conversation, you've already gotten clear, so you don't allow that emotion to come into play and overwhelm you and allow you or cause you to agree to a bad deal. So it's analogous to something I do with my three daughters. My daughters are 12 and 11. We have twins. We had 3 kids in 12 months, which is a fire drill for sure. But now, obviously, such a gift. But so, you know, it's the same thing I do with them. I say to them, look, what are some unacceptables in your life? What are things that we know right now as we're sitting here in our safe home as a family that you're not going to do when you grow up? What are those things? So, you know, then when they find themselves in that moment at that party or inside of a conversation that they're not comfortable with, they've already gotten clear on how they want to handle it. So that decision becomes easy. So that, to me, leaving should be clear because inside of non-emotional moments, you've already gotten clear.
This is always a tough thing to do in the workaday world, but what advice do you have for someone who's negotiating a raise or the acceptance of a job offer?
Well, I think it's really the 5 steps in the book, right? I mean, I think you want to prepare really well, right? So in other words, you want to build what I call a favor column with the person that you're asking a raise from. So in other words, you want to have probably well positioned, you want to have positioned yourself well on the front end of that conversation where you've over delivered in a consistent manner to where they need you, hopefully, more than you need them potentially. So you've added so much value to their world on a consistent basis that that relationship is really solid. And that when you pull back and say, boy, these guys go to bed at night and kind of feel like they owe me because I've outworked everybody here. And then I think you want to, have inside of that process, obviously connected with them and ensure that there's a relationship in place. And then I think you want to ask and have the courage to find the time, to find the moment that's right. And you'll know that best inside of that relationship when you can ask for what you want. And I would encourage people to, again, embrace that pause after they make that ask. Ask it in a way with the right tone and timing that the person on the other end is sort of receiving that, hopefully in a way that feels safe to them, right? Nobody ever wants to feel obviously threatened or cornered. So I think we want to ask it in a way that they feel comfortable with the way that we're doing that. So you want to find a time and a place and a space that you can do that. But, you know, we live once, right? And you don't want to go into a place. You work 82,000 hours in your life. That's a lot of time. Like, it takes me 10 minutes to empty the dishwasher, and I don't like to empty the dishwasher. You know what I mean? So yes. I don't want to do something for 82,000 hours that I don't like. But that's how long we work if we work from 22 and a half or so to 65. So we want to make sure that we ask for what we want. We want to make sure that we feel like something is fair. And, you know, we live in an environment. I mean, Harvard Business Review did a piece recently. I think, you know, 73% of the world is disengaged in the work that they do. And why are they disengaged? I don't know if it's money. I don't know what it is. But certainly when we feel like things are fair, I think that lends itself to wanting to go to bat for the people that we work for.
Molly, it's been great talking with you this afternoon.
Well, it was a pleasure to be with you as well. And I love Cincinnati, so I'm honored to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Molly. Molly Fletcher is head of the Molly Fletcher Company and a speaker and author. Her latest book is A Winner's Guide to Negotiating, How Conversation Gets Deals Done. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU.